This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
From the mines of Berkeley, to a Hindu festival in Oakland, to a tattoo parlor in San Francisco, and everything in between, we've got it here on CNS News. But first, a Berkeley student reflects on the events in his home country, Ukraine.
As he walks from class to class, Sergei Milishchuk's mind is on his motherland, Ukraine.
Basically, what Putin does, what Russia does, is completely unacceptable.
For the Berkeley graduate student who moved from Ukraine with his wife 2 years ago, the conflict in Crimea affects him even though it's 6,000 miles away.
It's really hard to be far away and not being able to participate. Pretty much all my family is in Kiev. I have some distant relatives in Crimea. All of my relatives are really disappointed and really sad about the events that are going on. It's the feeling that when something bad is happening and you can do nothing to change it.
Travel bans and asset
in an historic move Tuesday, Russian President Vladimir Putin announced his country's annexation of Crimea from Ukraine, despite sanctions and escalated warnings from the United States and its allies.
And we also remain deeply concerned about the large deployments of Russian forces in Crimea and along the eastern border with Russia.
The Institute of Slavic, East European, and Eurasian Studies at Berkeley brings together students and faculty focused on the former Soviet Union, including Edward Walker.
If there's a war between Ukraine and Russia, I think it could be, you know, it could be every bit as bad as the Yugoslav wars, if not worse.
Walker is an expert on Russian politics. He studied conflicts in the region for decades.
A major war in Europe is a terrible thing for everybody. It's going to affect the international economy inevitably. It'll affect your pocketbook because you're going to, if that happens, I'm sure that we're going to have to start spending more on defending NATO's eastern borders.
As the crisis escalates, those like Sergei are feeling helpless and fearful of what's to come.
Now there is a lot of uncertainty and not very pleasant anxiety because of this. Not knowing what's going to happen tomorrow or in future. It's really hard.
For CNS News, this is Mark Kurlyanchik.
The University of California sits in a precarious position atop the Hayward Fault, which runs through the entire East Bay. Now, a mine dug by Berkeley students in the 1920s may lead to a greater understanding of earthquakes.
So the University of California was originally founded in the 1860s as a mining and agricultural school. If you have a mining and agricultural school, you need to have fields and you need to have a mine.
The name of the mine shaft is the Lawson Adit. They started on digging it. The students were doing it with the oversight of the professors that were teaching the courses. They actually were teaching them how to do mining excavation, using explosives, shoring techniques, and also they practiced mine rescue.
Students dug 200 feet into the earth, but as they neared the Hayward Fault, the job became more dangerous. The ground became loose and cave-ins more common until the school closed the mine in 1929. But now the mine is being rediscovered.
Yeah. So what you're seeing here is the original shaft, another maybe 75, 80 feet up, and there's a side shaft where they used to store the dynamite, and that's actually where we're going to be installing the seismic equipment.
Geologists hope that the data gathered by the sensors will help further our knowledge of seismology and perhaps accurately predict when the long-awaited big one might hit.
It can happen any time. It could happen tomorrow. From the point of view of the rest of the city of Berkeley, it's always a challenge when you have an earthquake. I'm pretty sure that everything will be, in fact, bad. But when the option is bad or very, very bad, bad is kind of a good outcome.
For CNS News, I'm Mike Milano.
We're here in front of the I House, where Senator Rand Paul is coming to talk about how he opposes the NSA spying of Americans. Now, UC Berkeley is a pretty liberal place, and we're wondering, why would Senator Paul come to this place now at a time when he is a presidential candidate, presidential hopeful? I grabbed my camera, put on my favorite shirt, and ran on up here to see what the senator would have to say.
If you own a cell phone, you are under surveillance. I believe what you do on your cell phone is none of their damn business.
The NSA spy scandal is a favorite subject of the junior senator from Kentucky. And for tonight, Berkeley was his favorite place.
Parts of the Republican message, sort of the libertarian or liberty message, actually coincide with some actually progressives on the left. I mean, we have some things in common.
And he'll need to find that common ground with liberals if he hopes to win the presidency in 2016. He's already got the support of young Republicans like Shannon Earle.
I definitely agree with him a lot more than I agree with most other politicians. And he seems to value his positions less on his opinions and more on facts he's gathered.
Earle was carrying a copy of the Constitution with him, and he lucked out. Senator Paul signed it for him.
My favorite amendment is the 22nd Amendment.
The one that prevents presidents from serving more than two terms.
His signature. Sorry, Obama. You can't have a third term.
But Rand Paul is not likely to win a largely Democratic state like California, especially with his opposition to gay marriage and abortion. It seems the NSA may be one of the few topics the two parties can agree on. And if today's standing ovations are any indication of bipartisan support, Rand Paul's visit to Berkeley wasn't a waste of time. For CNS News, I'm Steve Fisher.
For the third year in a row, the Cal women's basketball team is heading to the NCAA women's basketball tournament.
The best part about watching the show is you don't know where you're going to be seated. I mean, seated our place. So, of course, it was nerve-wracking, but then at the same time, it was like excitement.
My teammates and I are just ready just for the NCAA tournament and just ready to get back on the court with one another. So we're just excited to see where we will be placed and who we will be playing against.
During the selection show, the team found out they will play Fordham on Saturday.
As we never saw Fordham play, they never saw us play, so all we can do is just get better with our own stuff.
This season, the Golden Bears won 21 games and lost 9, second only to Stanford in the Pac-12. They are a 7 seed in the tournament, and that means facing Baylor, last year's national champions, in the second round.
We know that every game is going to be a blood, sweat, tear, dogfight. So we just got to go out there and just play our best and never underestimate anyone.
Rashonda Gray is a junior. She's a 6'3" forward and the team's top scorer.
I'm not going to go out of my comfort zone or do anything that I don't normally do. I'm just going to go and just be Rashonda Gray. Yeah.
This team is excited to get on a plane and go somewhere and bring our show on the road and do the thing that we've done before, which is bring Cal basketball to a national stage in the greatest event, I think, in all of sports.
For CNS News, I'm Kathleen Zekum.
Berkeley's not been open for business for large-scale development, but that's about to change. For the next few years, the city will undergo an immense housing boom. Developers are set to build apartments, offices, and retail stores in and around the downtown area.
The scale's pretty high. We could get as close to 1,500 new dwellings within the next 4 to 5 years. There's going to be a lot of construction going on.
Construction has already started here on Durant Street. This former church site will see an 8-story apartment building going up in less than a year. Just 2 blocks away, Berkeley's first high-rise in 40 years.
That's where the 18-story apartment complex will be going in, right in that back section of the building.
The Downtown Berkeley Association said there are 11 projects currently underway, and they expect all of them to be finished by 2018.
And Berkeley's just become very attractive because on a grand scale, if you look at us, our crime rate is not as high. We have an amazing college.
Not everyone is impressed with giving a city a makeover. The chains living in a senior housing right next to Durant Street construction site.
It really affects us. The noise is too loud and the new building will be taller, so it is going to block our sunshine. We don't like it.
But most of Berkeley does. After nearly 10 years of discussion, the face of the city is changing.
was 5 years with a commission, and then there was a ballot measure about 3 years ago that passed about two-thirds vote of the citizenry. And I think people just realized that downtown Berkeley is just an amazing, wonderful urban place to live.
For CNS News, this is Leo Zhou.
Members of Hep C Free Oakland gathered at Lake Merritt for a Hepatitis C awareness walk and to provide free screenings.
A lot of people don't want to know they have hepatitis C because they think it can't be cured, that they think it can't be treated. And if we can convince them that they should get their tests now, then we could save some lives.
Yeah, I think the walk is very needed, you know, that more people need to find out about hepatitis C. They don't know they have it, they're walking around with it. And the sooner they find out, the better, because in the meantime, as long as they don't know, it's compromising every organ in their body, especially that liver. The hepatitis C is hell on the liver, and I know from personal experience because I had a family member that had it and died with it.
I didn't get tested there because I was afraid to find out because the treatment was brutal, but the treatments have gotten better now.
The human immune system normally produces interferon to fight viruses. For years, a man-made version was used to treat Hep C patients. But there are side effects for the year-long treatment, including fatigue, muscle pain, and depression.
Still, a medication you take for 12 weeks, and that seems simple enough. You know, I take medication anyway, so it'd be just like something else.
While treatments are improving, the costs remain a concern for advocates, insurers, patients, and taxpayers.
Well, people are worried about the price. Number one, it's a good thing that people have come up with the new drugs regardless of the price. Because you're either going to pay now or you're going to pay later. Having said that, we're always negotiating for better prices. And $1,000 a pill, I think, is unacceptable.
Isn't it? There is a cure.
As new medications hit the market and more patients obtain medical coverage, expect to hear more about the ongoing changes in Hep C treatment. For CNS News, this is Naima Jordan with Sarah LaFlorvetta.
In India, the arrival of spring is celebrated with Holi, an annual Hindu festival that marks the end of winter. In Oakland this week, a community celebration of Holi took place at the Indian fusion restaurant Juhu Beach Club.
Festival. It's based on a Hindu tale, but the concept of how it's kind of evolved is this festival, beyond having a religious ceremony, a puja, is people all wear white and they go out into the streets and they throw all of these bright colors at each other, and it happens every spring around this time of year.
Commonly referred to as the Festival of Colors. A central part of Holi is the spirit of dousing of just about everyone with brightly dyed powder. Historically, the powder has been dyed with the extracts of flowers from trees that blossom in the spring. They were also made of traditional Indian herbal medicines to fight spring allergies and colds.
So it's just like a kind of crazy, I don't know, Mardi Gras or something like that. Where everyone kind of lets loose.
The colors of Mother Universe are here.
For CNS News, Emily Gibson.
Aaron Silverston can see through time. As the founder and CEO of Owlized, a visualization solutions company, he's bringing the past and future to life with a gizmo he calls the Owl.
The idea just sort of popped in my head. Well, what if we took a coin-operated binoculars, like this kind of see it, a scenic viewpoint, and retrofitted it with digital technology and turned it into an interactive digital storytelling medium.
Owlized creates its visualizations from scratch, using everything from 3D models to archival material.
It's kind of like a video game environment. It's interactive, it's 3D, and it allows you to control what you're looking at by moving the owl around to create the illusion that you're actually sort of looking through a window into time.
Right now, you're looking at a future vision of San Francisco. Allies is currently self-funded and has had a number of major clients, including the city of Palo Alto. Last year, Allies worked with San Francisco's Better Market Street Initiative, which is hoping to improve the corridor from Embarcadero to the Castro.
They invited us to prototype our first OWL units at those workshops to show the public in a much more immersive environment what the different design options were at the time. They were then able to make, we think, a much more informed choice about what they prefer.
Silverston hopes his OWL will become the new standard of visualization for cities, developers, parks, and museums.
Typically, someone looks through the OWL, and the first words out of their mouth are, "Wow, this is cool." And then the second thing is, "This is really useful."
For CNS News, this is Susan Cohen.
At a time when the Mission District is showing signs of becoming the new Manhattan, Ignatius Vance tries to hold back the tide, one tattoo at a time, at his new shop at 16th and Mission.
Now that I'm married, have a child, and a mortgage, that if I don't open my own shop, I'm a fucking fool. I looked at this storefront in June, and they didn't lease it to me till October. And then some dude got smoked out on the street. 2 weeks after I leased it, everyone in the neighborhood took over my storefront as a memorial. You know, I kind of fucking freaked out. I didn't know what the fuck to do. But somehow I made it through and we're open for business. I just
sort of ripped. You know, we get here in the morning, we do our routine, we clean up, usually from the night before. And some days it's dead. It's raining outside, you know. Some days it's really nice and sunny, and we get some characters. So you never know what you're going to experience here at the shop, which makes it a good day no matter what, you know.
I'm very proud to be here. I feel like this block is very working class and gnarly and weird, but that's not its whole character. The first two people who came and got tattooed in our shop the first day we were open live upstairs. And the first thing they asked us is if we spoke Spanish. So, yeah, I ain't going fucking nowhere. You know, fuck all the condo high-rises, Google buses, like, I ain't getting pushed out. I'm the solution, not the problem.
For CNS News, this is Rigoberto Hernandez.
I would say it's ugly.
She's talking about the dating scene in San Francisco. Once known as the city of love, now, not so much.
It's been very hard for me.
It's been interesting.
I think it's one of the best experiences ever.
Dating sucks.
Why? Despite the buzz around the rise in the number of single men in the city, some successful women in their 20s and 30s still aren't dating like they used to.
I've lived here 5 years. I've had maybe 3 or 4 dates in 5 years. I've tried 2 different online dating sites. They're all horrible. I go to bars. Nobody talks to me. I can't find guys to save my life.
So where are all the men? They could be right in the palm of your hand. Mobile apps and websites are becoming the most common place for people to meet. To stay in the game, singles have to keep up with the constantly changing dating dynamics. That eHarmony profile just won't cut it.
Okay, so when I first moved out here, I joined a dating site, OkCupid, Plenty of Fish, and Tinder, and I went on a lot of dates.
But dating expert Annie Gleason says these apps will only get you so far.
Everybody thinks that it's going to create more than just a meeting. Like, I'm going to find love on OkCupid. No, you're going to find somebody to meet in person on OkCupid.
Gleason says things are different here in San Francisco.
In other cities, the men know that they're supposed to pursue, and they ask women out on dates. Here it's sort of a situation where people just hang out, and women don't know if men like them or not. The men are afraid to ask the woman out.
So what's a girl to do?
On the dating websites, you know, they tell you to, you should make the first move, so I try to make the first move, and it never ends up working.
So what's a boy to do?
I'm very chivalrous. I like to, you know, pull out the chair, hold the door, help you with your jacket, things like that. They thought I was trying to impress them or working too hard. I have become more passive because I don't want to come off as being disrespectful to a woman.
Maybe there's a simple solution.
Just based on talk with my friends, there needs to be some kind of, you know, mutual understanding that guys want girls to talk to them and girls want guys to talk to them. So how about we just cut out the awkwardness and everyone can just talk?
Talk. What a novel idea. For CNS News, I'm Brittany Johnson with Giselle Contreras.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.